Game On on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting those fridge details out of Carl Henry. I don't think I'll ever recover from hearing about that. It's Wednesday, the 11th of August, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Alan Cawley and David Connolly continue our build-up to the Premier League as the referees promise VAR reform.
So, one of the benefits we have next season is that we've now reintroduced, effectively, the benefit of the doubt to the attacking player. So, where you have those really close offside situations...
We're getting level back. What we used to deem as level before.
And if you look at it, we'd probably get 20 goals back that we would have disallowed last season. I think that's a really good thing for football.
In ladies football, Nadine Doherty and Emma Duffy are in studio to preview the All-Ireland semi-finals. Can Sarah Rowe and Mayo upset the Dubs in Croker?
You know, you put your work boots on whatever day it is and you go out to work hard, and to be in a semi-final is massive for Mayo with the new management, a new team essentially and all that. I think that'll bring a lot of momentum.
Marty Morrissey will join us from Mayo with more on that. Plus, he'll have the latest on Tyrone's COVID curveball and Limerick appealing this.
Which direction is he heading now? He's calling over Peter Casey. And it's a straight red card for Peter Casey. That will affect his participation in the final. And, well, he has to just to turn and go for the sideline now. The umpire saw something and Casey's off straight away.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome. Nadine Doherty is with me live in studio. And Nadine, a story that caught my eye today was Rob Kearney returning to Cooley Kickhams. So he's been in Australia playing rugby over there with the Western Force. He's obviously a very decorated Irish and Leinster player. And he's back playing Gaelic football for the first time since 2004.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Maria. Bit of a curveball. And, you know, we've seen plenty of stars recreate and rebrand themselves in other sports. You know, we'd be familiar on the female side of things. You have Nora Stapleton, Lindsay Peat. If you want to go world stage, you have Michael Jordan back in the day. He gave basketball a go. And, you know, at the minute, we're looking at Hannah Tyrrell with Dublin. She's on the front of every newspaper and she's everywhere you look at the minute. But it's an interesting moment, Rob Kearney. Yeah, you know, I wonder if Mickey Hart had anything to do with it. Have there been any little phone calls in the background? Get back into club first for a while and see how we go with County. But if he's going to give it a serious effort, like, it's huge commitment if he's going from Dublin to Louth a couple of times a week, and it'll be a far cry from the lovely beaches in Australia to the fields of Cooley. But look, it's a great boost for the club and for the county in Louth. And look, if he does make it to that Louth setup, it won't do his career any harm. Could give him more commercial appeal, not that he needs any, but you know, it could also be an end to the GPA sponsorship opportunities, and maybe he's thinking down the line something we're not thinking of.
Well, there is a huge market out there for Gaelic Games players. So look, his last significant GAA action was the 2004 Loud senior final. He scored a point, although Cooley were edged out by just a point by St Patrick's. He did play a little bit in 2005, but 2004 was his last big one. So it's a long time for him to be out of action. Now look, I'm not a hurling snob or anything, but if it's a sport to go back to, Gaelic football is probably one of the easier ones to take up.
Yeah, well, definitely, as opposed to hurling. And just even listen to your podcast with Colin Cooper this week, though, he made such a good point. You know, to be the best of the best, you do have to practice every single day. Rob hasn't played football in a long time, but look, he's a professional athlete. He probably played underage his whole life.
He does catch a lot of high balls.
I mean, he's a professional. He's physically in great shape. And with no disrespect to Louth, you know, but you're looking at a Division 4 team there, Cooley as well. You know, Louth club football mightn't be the top of the top. So I think he'll be brilliant, and I'm really interested to see where he does line out. I think he'll get a lot of reporters flocking down to Louth in the next couple of weeks.
Well, as you said, like, it has been done before, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Hannah Tyrrell a little bit later on, but she did play a bit of a club season beforehand, a bit like Rob. She was back with the club first before she took to the pitch with Dublin, but she made the transition look really, really easy. So the skills that she accumulated playing professional, well, in all but name, professional rugby, the skills that she was able to transfer, it really worked.
Absolutely. And you know, her return to Gaelic, I suppose, for me, isn't as impressive as how she approached rugby, because she would have played Gaelic her whole life. But the way she played rugby for me was unbelievable, having taken up the sport. And within, I think, about 18 months, she was on the sevens team. Another couple of years, she was on the 15s team. And I just find that more incredible even than her return to football. But I watched her in a few Nafina games in the club scene before she rejoined Dublin. And I wasn't the only person who was shouting for her to come back to Dublin. And look what she's done. You know, she's just been incredible. She's gone off the boil a little bit compared to her high standards in the league. You know, she isn't raking up as many scores, but she's still highly influential whenever it comes to it, you know.
A championship is a little bit more intense,
that's
as you
it.
Well know.
That's it.
So, look, a bit of a blow. We'll move on now to soccer, Nadine. A little bit of a blow for the Bohemians fans. They had travelled to Greece. I'm not sure how many of them, but there were some over there. And unfortunately, they will not be able to attend that Europa Conference League game against PAOK that's scheduled for tomorrow. So, the club released a statement. They said, Greek police have this evening informed the club that only people with Greek passports will be permitted to access the stadium. They're told that any travelling fans who purchased a ticket will have their ticket refunded, and the club has no say in this. So look, I guess that's the rules. You know, UEFA have put their rules out before this game. I know yesterday as well, the Irish fans were dealt a blow, the ones that were heading to Portugal. They will not be able to go to any of the World Cup qualifiers. I know a few people actually that have booked flights to Portugal for that game, but it's going to be no away fans in these games, and it's unfortunate for them, but look, they were in the COVID times.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's still a good bit of crack in Greece now with the Bose fans.
I mean, if you're going to be anywhere, I think Greece or Portugal wouldn't be bad places to be, you know, to be sunning yourself and maybe watching the game on the TV.
Totally. It's just disappointing for them, I suppose. If Bose do get through, it'll be one of the greatest days in Bose history, and it would have been lovely for those fans to be in the stadium. But look, as I said, I'm sure they'll be happy enough in the sun.
Yeah, we're going to be chatting to Marty Morrissey a little bit later on as well, just trying to see where we are at with that COVID situation in Tyrone. There was a little bit of a development today. The GPA came out and they backed Tyrone. Essentially, they said that they should prioritise their health, and the most important thing is that they look after themselves and don't put themselves under any, I guess, stress and pressure to play. Because can you imagine being in that situation, Nadine, where, you know, you're trying to recover from COVID, you don't get to prepare for something that you've been preparing your whole life for, which is a match against Kerry in an All-Ireland semi-final, which is what you'd have dreamed of, and your preparations are just completely in disarray, essessentially.
I can only imagine what it's like for them. You know, I've been involved in preparations for big games whereby we might have been sweating on the fitness of one or two players. And, you know, I can only imagine the levels of worry Tyrone are experiencing at the minute, waiting on the health status of, I think it's over 50% of their squad.
Yeah.
And then not to mention the disadvantage of missing out on the tactical training side of things. You know, a team goes through different set plays, different, you know, match plays for different opponents. So they're missing out on all that. It's just, you know, I see it as the GAA, obviously they're keen to avoid a longer postponement because of the knockout and the delay to the club championships. But you'd have to think, if this was the case for an All-Ireland final, would we be in a situation whereby one of the All-Ireland finalists would be threatening to pull out? I don't think so. I think the extra time would be given, and rightly so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you said, it's COVID times. Anything can happen. Any of those club championships could be postponed because of COVID. I just think with dates, you'd like to see the GAA maybe being a little bit more flexible and giving Tyrone that extra week, because this could happen to any of the teams left now in the championship.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even just purely from a fan's point of view, and being a little bit selfish about it, we haven't had the best football championship this year, and that game is one that would really catch the interest, and you would want to have Tyrone at their peak of their powers. You'd want them to have all their players available to them and prepared as best they can and have a really good game. And you just hope that they will be in a situation where they can perform the way that they want to. They conceded 6 goals against them last time out, and you don't want it to be in a situation where you have a one-sided All-Ireland semi-final that could be prevented.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't think Kerry would want that either. You know, they've come out and said, you know, this isn't the best thing for our preparations, but we completely understand, and, you know, if the extra time's needed to give it. But I think out of all the fixtures this year, this has been one everybody's been looking forward to. And, you know, from a Tyrone point of view, and even the four teams left, if their club championships were pushed out a little bit longer, I don't think those fans would really mind, because they'd be getting to see fantastic championship football, and that's what you'd hope for. It's just a really difficult situation. And, you know, all the codes have been really lucky to date that games have gone ahead. You know, when you look at last year, you know, a few counties had outbreaks of COVID, and even this year, like Mayo were close to maybe not fielding, but, you know, they had a
significant weaker team
against Leitrim. And then last year we had Sligo, they pulled out of the championship. We had a few matches in the Christy Ring that didn't go ahead. So we have been lucky. So I think the GAA should maybe look at the luck that we've had so far and give it
a bit the Dublin
of a break.
Hurlers did end up having to play without a few of their players, and even when you think of Tyrone against Monaghan, they were missing
four of their players.
And they were important players as well, so they have tried in the past to do what they can, but this does seem like it is quite a number of players are affected. And just further news on that All-Ireland football semi-final between Tyrone and Kerry, a time has been announced today. It will throw in at 3 p.m. on Saturday afternoon if it does go ahead, and then the subsequent All-Ireland football final is penciled in for Saturday the 4th of September at 3 p.m. And if you don't have any plans for that day, don't make any, because then at 5 o'clock Ireland's World Cup qualifier against Azerbaijan kicks off at the Aviva Stadium on the same day. So it's going to be a busy one. It's actually going to be a busy few weeks. Now we're going to take a very quick break. The Premier League is starting as well this weekend, if there wasn't enough on, so we're going to preview that very shortly with Alan Cawley and David Connolly.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We are now going to turn our attention to the Premier League. It gets underway on Friday after, which feels like a long enough break because we had the Euros in between. David Connolly joins us and Alan Cawley. David, to you first. Are you looking forward to the return of the Premier League?
Oh, yeah. Good evening. You know, it's Marie, it's been a long time. I know we've had the Euros, but as you say, obviously being back in live, you know, live football matches. I was at a few this week already, and you know, you've really missed the fans. I can't tell you. I mean, it's been completely different, and I'm hoping it lives up to what everyone hopes, you know, in terms of not being at live football, which there's nothing like it. You can't beat it.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be more than a two-horse race like that we'd kind of been expecting for the last few years. Alan Cawley is with me as well. Alan, just do you think that we're going to get a situation where Man City are going to run away with it, or do you think there will be teams challenging them at the business end?
No, I don't think it'll be a one-horse race by any stretch, Marie. Obviously, when we looked at it last year, of course, we were all building up to the challenge between Liverpool and Man City, and obviously Liverpool trying to defend the title that they'd won, but that never really transpired, of course, because of the injuries, and they were really, really unfortunate and lucky, and obviously with Van Dijk as well missing the whole season. So I think this year with a full strength Liverpool, I think you'll see a whole different side of them and back to their best very much. So even though they haven't spent hugely in the transfer market, I think when they get all their players back fit, they're every bit a match for Man City, and obviously they've brought in the centre half Kanate as well. So I definitely think you'll see Liverpool challenging, and I also think Chelsea, obviously since Tuchel has come in, I know in the start of the season under Lampard I had high hopes for them as maybe dark horses for the league, but things didn't work out for him. But certainly since Tuchel has come in, he's obviously gotten a serious tune out of them. The squad of players that had assembled before he came in as well was obviously very, very strong. And from what I'm hearing tonight, it looks like Lukaku is arriving into London this evening as well. And if they get him, because I think that was the only area they were missing out in, was having a top quality centre forward. Obviously, Werner was there last year, Giroud, Tammy Abraham. But one of that kind of elite superstar centre forwards, I always felt that if they got someone like that, they'll certainly put it up to Man City and Liverpool. So I actually think it'll be a three-horse race with those three, Marie, and it'll be a hard one to call, I think, with those three, if you have them all obviously playing to their full potential.
Yeah, I guess that's it really, Alan, isn't it? Playing to their full potential, because when you do look at the, I guess, the teams that you would count as the top six as well, you know, they are brimming with superstars. A lot of them do have very balanced sides, but that doesn't always translate into a consistent season because they are quite long season. David, Man City, though, they seem to have strengthened where they needed to strengthen, and although I guess you probably wouldn't even think so when you do break it down, but they have added Jack Grealish, and it looks like they're going to have Harry Kane as well. So when you think of attacking options, they have plenty of them now.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, in terms of what Man City have kind of done, because, you know, the likes of Jack Grealish and Harry Kane, they're incredible Premier League players, but neither of them are blessed with pace. And that's interesting because, you know, if you look at the other side in terms of what they got at the top end of the pitch, you know, they've got lots of pace. Now, they lost Leroy Sané, who was quick, you know, but Bernardo Silva's not quick. I know, but what I'm getting at is basically it's like Pep is refining his plan A, which is to break teams down with brilliant, you know, possession play and passing. But I just wondered about Grealish and Harry, because really, apart from Raheem Sterling, they don't have that much pace in the front part of the pitch. And I just wondered whether they'd go with something a little bit different. You know, I think the league's going to be a lot tighter, like Alan said. I think United, you go back to United, right? And I know we talk a lot about United on here, but, you know, United were sort of undone by their start last year, which was due to the fact that Europa League, they lost, what, two of the first couple? They lost two of the last few games. That's because they sort of started a little bit late, and when they were finishing, they had a lot of games in a short period of time. I think United are going to be a lot stronger this season. Obviously, no Rashford at the minute, we know that, but I think they're going to run City a lot closer than they did. I think Leicester will be up there. I think Chelsea, yes, they'll be up there. But I just look, even if they do get Kane, Man City, I think they'll blow teams away. But I think it's going to be a little bit tighter because, look, Nathan Ake is a backup. I don't think he's the right backup. You saw Mendy in the Community Shield. He is nowhere near the same level as Zinchenko. And it looked like, to me, Pep complicated it too much in the Community Shield. So I think it's going to be tight, and I think it's going to be a little bit more open. And I think, unless he gets Kane, I think Pep might be a little bit worried about, are they going to have enough to win this league?
Yeah, and I guess as well, Alan, because they don't just want to win the league next season, they also want to win a Champions League.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that's the stick that everyone has to beat Pep with at the moment, is the fact they haven't achieved that under his tenure at Man City. But he keeps obviously deflecting that away with saying it's about the bread and butter and winning the league. So, of course, they'll be challenging on all fronts. And that's to have the squad and resources for. As I said to you many times, Marie, over the past number of weeks, I think the Kane thing is done. It's only a matter of when it gets done. And I think it will be, maybe not this week, obviously, with the fact that both teams are playing each other on Sunday. I don't think he'll feature Harry Kane in that game, but I think he'll go to Man City, obviously, maybe next week, and I think that will be done. They're just trashing out a deal, I feel, at the moment. I wouldn't have United in the mix for winning the league, Marie. I think United were only there last year because, even though they improved, but I think because there was no challenge from Liverpool, and obviously the Chelsea one came very late. So I think, as I already outlined with Liverpool and Chelsea, when they have their full complement of players, and now with Tuchel in charge as well, I think they overtake Man United. And I still think the worry for United, even though they've got Sancho, a very exciting winger, as we know, but they have Greenwood and Rashford already there. They've brought in Varane. I think that'll strengthen things all right at the back with Harry Maguire. But I still think they need a centre forward. And when you see Chelsea signing the likes of Lukaku, Harry Kane, as I say, will more than likely go to City. And obviously with the front three that Liverpool have, and if they come back to form, I still think those three have far more than what United have at the top end of the pitch.
Alan, I'm a long-suffering Man United fan like yourself. And I was going to ask there, you know, do you think Varane and Sancho are enough? I don't see it as enough. And I can't believe United haven't done that huge clear out yet. Like, I think a lot of deadwood has actually been returned back to the squad. Like Pereira, okay, Lingard had a good second half of the season at West Ham, but is he good enough for United? You know, Diego Dalot, players like this, Dan James, Brandon Williams, Phil Jones. Why are they still with United?
Yeah, I agree with you totally, Nadine. As I say, I might be a long-suffering Man United fan, but I agree totally. Those players are not good enough for Man United, and certainly not at the Man United level that we know them as. And certainly when you're comparing them to the likes of the top quality that City and Liverpool, Chelsea yeah. have. So White have brought those back. I don't know. I agree with you on the Lingard thing. Even though he done well at West Ham, I think that's his level. I don't see him playing in the top four, or certainly with a Man United, and making an influence like he's obviously nowhere near the category of a Grealish or De Bruyne or these boys that'll be playing in the other team. So, yeah, I would agree. And on top of that as well, Nadine, even though they've only brought in Sancho and Varane, I don't think it's enough to answer your question. And I don't think the manager's enough. That's the biggest problem that they have. I just don't think, when you look at Man City with Guardiola, Klopp, Tuchel, the elite level, I don't think Solskjaer comes anywhere near close to that. And that's effectively what's going to deprive them of getting back anywhere near the top until they get a top quality manager in. And I think the example of that we've seen in the Euros with Pogba, I think everybody has the conversation around Pogba, and it seems as though it's a weekly thing. But when you see the performances that he put in, obviously with a Deschamps with France and how good he was in the Euros, and yet the indulgence that's around him, I think, from the manager at Man United, and how he's almost a law unto himself, really, Pogba, when he plays. Not saying he's a bad lad in terms of he's disruptive, but just the fact that you're not getting the best out of him on a weekly basis. Because I think if he was playing under a Klopp or a Guardiola and the demands that they put under players, he would have to get the best out of himself, whereas I don't think Solskjaer does that enough. So I think not only is the players an issue in comparing them to the other teams, I think the manager is a big issue as well, Nadine.
And even like looking at managers at the top level, and to both of you lads, like, is there a shortage of top managers? Like, who would you bring in instead of Solskjaer, let's say?
I don't think there's a shortage, no. I think there's serious managers there, and obviously a lot of them want to come over and be in the league, and even around Europe. I would have looked at the likes of Allegri or a Conte. I know maybe they were difficult to get. I would have Brendan Rodgers ahead of Solskjaer as well. I think Brendan Rodgers is a brilliant manager, and what he's done at Leicester, and I would throw Leicester into the mix again this year in terms of maybe breaking into that top four. But I think what he's achieved has been absolutely phenomenal as well. I just think there's far better managers out there, and that's no slight on Solskjaer. Look, everybody loves him in terms of he seems to be a really likeable fella. He was a great player, but if you're getting down to the nitty gritty of it and comparing him to the likes of a Klopp and a Guardiola and Tuchel, there's no comparison. It's not even a debate.
And David, another team that we haven't mentioned at all and hasn't really been in the conversation is Spurs, and there is still, even though Alan doesn't seem to think so, a very small possibility that Harry Kane could start the season with them. How do you think they're going to fare this year?
Yeah, I mean, the one mistake I think Harry made, and it was a costly one, is when you sign a contract like that, you look at Grealish, and although, you know, maybe he felt and Villa felt, you know, they were never going to get an offer of 100 million, at least the clauses in the contract. Now, whether he had a gentleman's agreement or not, his big error was obviously signing that length of contract without a get-out, and especially if you're dealing with Daniel Levy. So that's killed him, in effect. Look, I think he will go, but like Alan says, I think he definitely will go, but I can't see Spurs. And if you look at Wolves under Nuno, you know, Wolves under Nuno did great to get to where they got in the Europa League, but they were completely dominated. They're not a ball possession team. They're a side that sit back and hit you on the counter, and I'll be interested to see how they get on with Nuno, because he's not someone who plays terrific, exciting football. Anyone who watches Wolves will admire them for what they've done. But, you know, they hit teams and sit back and absorb a lot of pressure. They don't play on the front foot. They don't go and press the ball high. So he did well, but once they didn't have Jimenez, they really struggled. So I don't know how well Nuno is going to do there, to be honest, and especially if they lose Harry Kane. I mean, they still have Son, etc., but I think they're going to be for a very tough season once Harry Kane goes.
What about Arsenal, Alan? Speaking of managers that might find it a little bit tough, Mikel Arteta obviously didn't get the best out of his team last year. Do you think we're going to see something similar, or will he be able to improve them?
I think it's going to be something similar. I think the jury is still very much out on Arteta, Marie. Obviously, I think what bought him a lot of time last year was the fact that he won the FA Cup when he first came in. But if you look at them finishing eighth last year on 61 points, I think overall it was a disappointing season. And if you go back to the amount of games that we covered with Arsenal, they were so disappointing in so many. They've only brought in Ben White. I think Ben White is a good player. Whether he'd pay 50 million for him, I'm not so sure, but I certainly think he'll be an addition to that Arsenal squad. But that's not saying much, because I don't think much of that Arsenal squad, to be honest with you. And the top six, as we used to know it, the established top six, with obviously City, United, Liverpool, Chelsea and Spurs and Arsenal, I don't think that's the case anymore. I think Leicester City have overtaken both Spurs and Arsenal. And I think both Spurs and Arsenal, I would agree with David as well, especially if they lose Kane, I think both Arsenal and Spurs have a fight on their hand just to get into the top six. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But certainly with Arteta, for me, the jury is very much out.
It'll also be interesting to see how the changes in VAR affect the game, because there was so much criticism of it last year, and it looks like it is going to be a bit different this year. The Premier League are hoping to clamp down on soft penalties, and they reckon that attackers are going to benefit from the scrapping of so-called toenail offsides. So as always with VAR, it is a little bit complex. The Premier League referees did brief Jamie Carragher. Let's hear how they explained it to him.
And there's always going to be a margin in an offside situation, but that margin is, and the benefit of the doubt, is certainly going back more towards the attacking team this season.
The other one about offsides that caused a bit of frustration, particularly with players last year, was where we kept the flag down to create the VAR window, as they call it. And there were certain situations where the player was clearly 5 metres offside, or the ball went out wide, and there wasn't a clear and obvious attack. Those now we're encouraging the assistant referees to flag.
One of the other changes we're going to see this season, I think everyone's been calling for, is almost a change in the handball rule in terms of scoring a goal. Now, it can only be the goal scorer who can be penalised rather than the guy who assists the goal scorer in terms of it to the arm.
I think there's an understanding or a feeling in football that if the person who handles the ball then immediately scores, that can't be right.
But one of the ones that we didn't like was if it forces the player who then passes it to a teammate who scores. Last season that was disallowed, but IFAB have listened to that, not just from us, from other people as well, and that will now be a goal next season. I think that's a positive step.
I think what everyone needs to remember is football is a contact sport. So in recent times, all areas of the game have been focusing on, if there's contact, that automatically means it's a foul. And that's not the case. The process for us on field is all about us still making a positive decision on the field.
So you're talking about the threshold for contact and for a penalty is going to be a lot higher.
I think it moves more back to the Premier League football that we know and love with. Physical contact, free-flowing game, competitive and compelling football. And I think that's a good thing for the game, and I think it's a good thing for referees as well.
David Connolly, you were at a briefing of the referees, so you have a good grasp on what changes we can expect. Are we going to get a better game?
Let's hope so. I mean, look, Maria, it can't get any worse. I mean, you know, the decisions that are, I mean, there's so many. I mean, where do you start with them? There was a record penalties last season, 125. You know, and some of them were so soft. I'll give you one example. I was at the Amex, and I know Aaron Connolly got the penalty, but there was a perceived stamp on him by Michael Keane, who barely touched him. The ref basically didn't give the penalty, and VAR overruled the referee. I mean, it was absolutely scandalous. There's that, there's the marginal offside, there's the Aston Villa goalkeeper, he carried the ball over the line, which kept them in the league, and you think, right, the VAR is for the big decisions, right? That's what you want it for, not for the forensic marginal decisions, you want it for the big decisions. And even then it didn't get involved with goal line technology. So I think, look, this is a step in the right direction. I think they've definitely got to now, you know, give the benefit of the doubt to the attackers, which is great. And basically, they're trying to mirror UEFA. Because, you know, in Holland, they've been playing with this. In different countries, they've been going with this form of VAR. It was just in the Premier League that it had this forensic element, and it destroyed it. I mean, some of the decisions were absolutely awful. Bamford's armpit offside when he's pointing, I think it's against Crystal Palace. I mean, shocking. The list is absolutely incredible. So, look, it's a step in the right direction, and fingers crossed, it's a million times better than it was last season.
Alan, we spent so many of our review shows talking about VAR and the faults with it and how frustrating it is. But look, at least they're starting to make changes anyway.
What you missed in that report, Marie, was Mike Riley actually saying to Carragher, Alan Cawley rang me direct and he wants me to make these changes.
Anything to stop you giving out, Al.
Because the things that they're implementing now are exactly what we're all looking for, Marie. Like that one where the toenail offside, and as David said, the arm. But I was watching that match live. Patrick Bamford points to where he wants the ball, scores a great goal, and it gets chalked off. So it used to infuriate everybody involved with football. So now that we have the fans back in the ground as well, if we can eradicate those silly little as I say, those decisions. And it looks like we're going back to what I've read and what I've heard from Mike Riley and the referees, that we're going back to level is now onside. Also, the one that used to drive me up the walls as well was them not putting the flag up, even though somebody might be 10 yards offside, somebody sprinting back, someone was probably going to end up getting an injury, a bad injury, and then they decide to put the flag up. So that one as well, they're going to obviously put the flag up now. So if they can do that, Marie, and if you think about VAR, all the frustrations we had with it when... It's more about the implementation of it in the Premier League, because when you watch Champions League matches, they used to seem to work it so well. Even in the Euros, I felt they got it correct and got it right. So hopefully the Premier League has learned from those, and with these changes that will come in, hopefully it's not the case that we're analysing every decision after a match about what VAR did and didn't do. So hopefully it is for the betterment of the game.
Yeah, I think we'll all agree on that. David Connolly, before we finish up, I want you to give me your top four so that I can play it back to you in 9 months' time.
Oh, jeez, I hate these things. I'm going to go City, Man City, Chelsea, Liverpool, and United. That's my top four.
Okay, well, Alan, I did enjoy reminding you over and over again that you predicted Chelsea would win last year. Who are you going to predict this year? Top
yeah,
four.
But now they have a right manager, so I'm going to go Chelsea again, Marie. Oh. Especially if they get Lukaku. But I did. If Kane signs for City, which I've said all along he will, they'll be a force, especially with Grealish. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Grealish with Man City and what he brings to the party, because I think he's an unbelievable talent. So I think those two will fight it out. I think Liverpool will be close. You're probably going to ask me for one, so I will. I'll go Chelsea again this year. I think Tuchel's a great manager.
Okay, well, Alan and David, thank you so much for joining us. Looking forward to Friday evening and the start of the Premier League. We will have a fantasy league, no doubt, as well for Game On. I'm looking out here at Laura Lee, the producer, and she's all over it.
Game On on 2FM with Green Fern. Fuel your day with Green Fern's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. I'm still in studio with Nadine Doherty, and Emma Duffy of The 42 has also joined us, and we are going to look ahead to the weekend's All-Ireland semi-finals women's football. But before we get to the games themselves, Emma, there was some good news earlier in the week when the semi-final between Cork and Meath was moved to Croke Park from Tuam.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was something everyone was talking about, that they wanted it done. Every player wants to play in Croke Park, and I suppose when you're seeing the two other teams in the other semi-final playing there, there is probably that little bit of unfairness maybe. And Tuam was, I thought, a bizarre decision. I suppose you have teams travelling from Meath and Cork, and the distance there, it's nowhere near the middle. Obviously I know TV plays into it and all these different things, but look, it's fantastic now that we have two semi-finals in Croke Park this weekend, and we're all really, really looking forward to them.
Very much so, Nadine, and there was a lot of unhappiness that one of them was there and the other one wasn't, and the thing is, now that both of them are there, it'll be very hard to get them out.
Yeah, I think though, you know, the elephant in the room still remains, because if there was no change to the men's game, we'd be still looking at one semi-final, which isn't good enough at this stage. And, you know, last week, loads of people contacted me about it, and people want to know, like, because the LGFA said other venues were approached, Tuam was the best they could get. So I think people want to know, like, what other venues were approached and what reasons were given for turning it down. And I just think this narrative of, you know, taking whatever we can get and saying thank you, I don't think it's working for anybody anymore, especially not the players. And, you know, we're constantly given the excuse of lack of pitches, or you can't please everybody. And it just doesn't float anymore. And I think everybody would agree with that. And especially the players, they just expect more and they deserve more.
That's a really good point, actually. And it's something that isn't probably done enough. And Emma, that's accountability. And if other pitches and clubs and grounds were asked, well, they should be publicised. Like, why aren't they giving their pitches to the women in their community that are part of their club, that have backboned the clubs as well? Why are they saying no and leaving them to go to places that just most of the time are unsatisfactory?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with what both of you have saying there. I suppose there's a bit of deja vu to last year, the All-Ireland semi-final fiasco between Cork and Galway. I'm sure everyone kind of remembers that. Obviously, completely understand that they are separate organisations and separate associations, and unfortunately, until there is kind of, you know, progress made on that front,
this is just going to keep happening, which is shocking to players, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it boils down to the game every other year. Why are there three separate associations? Why is there a reluctance to come under the same umbrella? There rarely seems to be any forward planning and a lot is left to chance. You know, we were also told that initial doubleheader in Croke Park depended on who won the quarterfinal. So if it was a case that Donegal and Galway were your semi-finalists, would there have been a situation whereby that game was going to be in Croke Park? I don't know the answer to that. I'd be thinking maybe a no. And it's just not good enough anymore. There needs to be more forward planning. And look, as I said, that question, why are there three separate associations and not one? It just comes up year after year after year.
Yeah, that's a fact. Look, hopefully the fact as well that the women's GPA and the men's GPA have merged will see more progress, because they were able to make a lot of progress with the expenses in such a short period of time that maybe they might tackle the fixtures issue and the venues issue next, which would be a really good one to get their teeth into, and the combined power that they have, they show as well what they can do. But let's move on to the games, because we do have two absolutely fascinating semi-finals. And let's start with Dublin and Mayo, Emma. Dublin, look, they are favourites, deservedly so. Like, we've seen them in action. We've seen the depth of their panel. We've seen them being able to bring new players into the team as well and make them even better. Is there any stopping them?
Yeah, that's the big question, Marie, isn't it? And it's one that's going to be answered at the weekend, I guess. As you say, Dublin, heavy, heavy favourites going into this one, and why shouldn't they be? Mayo, I suppose, I was very impressed with their quarterfinal performance, I have to say. I know Nadine Doherty here beside me was tipping Galway all the way. But I know she was impressed by them. And
surprised, but yeah, impressed.
We'll take it. We'll take it. But look, it's fantastic. Obviously, there's a bit of a rivalry there. It all kind of adds to it, the fact that it's a doubleheader with the men's as well. There's lots of stories going into it. I think Mayo will probably be hoping that they can catch Dublin on the hop. That's probably the big thing. Dublin are so well drilled. But look, Mayo as well, they have serious pace, power, physicality. Some of the biggest football names in the country, and Sarah O, Rachel Kearns, the Kelly sisters, Fiona McHale. Like, they do have everything going into this that they possibly could have to take down Dublin, minus Aileen Gilroy, of course, who's been a big loss. But I think Michael Moyle said after the quarter final that, you know, knockout stages was bonus territory, a semi final is bonus territory, but they'll absolutely take that, and they're probably coming into the game in maybe a little bit of a better position. You know, coming in under the radar is sometimes a nice way to be coming into the game, and Dublin have been in the semi-final every year, I think, since 2014. So, you know, they have a job to do on Saturday evening, but Mayo will be confident in themselves of stopping that.
We heard Sarah Rowe at the top of the show and making the points that you made there as well, Emma, that, you know, they do have a new management in as well, and they are putting their best foot forward for them and kind of growing into the championship and learning from every game, as the management will be, and the players and the setup and everything that they want to do. But I guess the flip side of that, Nadine, is that Dublin are so far down the road. They're so well conditioned, they have that physicality, and as Emma said as well, they're so well drilled, they know exactly what they need to do at all times, and it's really hard to counter that for the span of a whole game.
Yeah, like, you know, they've been our favourites from day one, and we've struggled to identify many, if any, weaknesses. They're consistent in every aspect of their play. Like, they don't panic. Like, I was down at that game, the Donegal game, and just watching them on the sideline, I was trying to listen in to the water breaks, you know, to see what Mick Bohan was saying. You could just get the gist of, you know, trust the process, stick to it. They all do, and they're all safe in the knowledge that it will win them the game. And, you know, even that quarter final was a prime example. Very few teams would have come back having gone 1-2 down against a team like Donegal, and they did. And, you know, I know I beat the same drum every week, but they've the two best players in the country in Lindsay Davey and Carter Rowe. They're their conductors, they dictate the tempo, they're the leaders, and they make the difference for me in every single game. I think a massive advantage Dublin have is physically, they have a huge advantage, and I think there's a difference in physically being stronger and being a physical team. Yeah, Mayo are a physical team, but you just look at that middle third, and Niamh Kelly and Sinead Cafferty, who are fantastic footballers, and they have massive pace, but they're coming up against Lauren McGee and Jennifer Dunn. Like, there's a massive difference there, and I'd worry for Mayo just from that regard. the ref, I think, will be a massive factor, and perhaps more so with all eyes on Croke Park and the debate over the last couple of weeks. You know, Seamus Mulville, he is very experienced. He's refed at the top level for a long time, but I've seen him in the past allow the two-handed physical Dublin tackle, and he lets games go. But will he allow that tackle, and will he allow the freeze to mount up like Dublin were allowed to do in the quarterfinal, or will we see punishment not only on the free count but also in terms of sin bins? And I think that is going to be a defining feature. But for me, look, if I have to call one, I think Dublin will win comfortably. I think they're the best team in the country, and as I said, they're my favourites from day one. But look, the last time I gave my own chance, I had to eat my words, and I will gladly do it again. But look, I don't think Mayo have come up against anything close to this Dublin team, and you know, you look at the Galway Armagh games and it's not even near the same level. So
Emma, the refereeing is going to be quite interesting, and there are going to be a lot of eyes on it because of Mick Bowen's comments after the last game against Donegal and Maxi Curran. What way do you think the referee is going to approach that, just given the fact that there's going to be so much focus on him?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one, and it's going to be a big talking point going into the weekend and definitely after it more so. I do think the game does have to be let flow. Look, it's the biggest, one of the biggest games of the year on the biggest stage with a lot more eyes than normal watching it, I'd imagine. So I do think the game will have to be let flow, but, you know, within reason. Obviously, the rules are there for a reason. They have to be followed. I know you had a fantastic discussion last week about, I suppose, the tackle, the definition of the tackle. It's there. It's clear and bare in the rules, but it's not being coached that way. And it is something that Dublin have probably pushed, absolutely pushed. And you know, that's sport, that's fine margins, and it's worked for them so far. But even just as Nadine said, the last day sin bins, I was very surprised that they only had one player sent off, and it was at the very end of the game. So that is something to look at this weekend. Look, there's so much controversy and debate around it. A lot of it is probably subjective. The charging rule in particular is one that I have huge issue with through the years. I've seen it, you know, judged different way in different games. In the same game, I've seen players sin binned for doing it different ways. So I do think there has to be a little bit of clearance maybe on that one. But yeah, it's definitely something coming into the weekend that there'll be a lot of eyes on.
Yeah, it's added another kind of layer to the narrative as well. So let's move on to Cork and Meath. Oh, just before we go, who are you going for, Emma?
I'm going to go Dublin.
Okay.
I'm going to go Dublin. I do think Mayo will give them a good run of it. And I think what Mayo have to do is they have to come out and put the game to Dublin. They can't go defensive. They have to try and play their own game, because, look, they have to try and play the game on their terms. How long they'll be able to do that for, that's the question. But I do think Dublin will eke it out in the end, definitely.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Limerick Hurlers and Cork going up against them as well. It's kind of the same sort of concept heading into it. So we also have Cork and Meath this weekend in Croke Park on Sunday. And okay, while I suppose Dublin and Mayo, you'd expect it to be a bit predictable, this one could be very unpredictable, Nadine.
Yeah, you know, we said a few weeks ago in the group fixture that it'd be a close affair, and it proved to be just that. Cork, I think it was 2 points they won by, maybe with quite an unconvincing performance, but a great game. A lot of people are tipping Meath already. You know, I've heard listened to a few things today and read a few things. But if you look closely at Meath so far, I'm one of their biggest advocates. I think they're absolutely brilliant, and their game plan and everything, it's superb. But look at their performances. Okay, against Cork, a good performance, but they lost. Against Tip, a team who this year are ravaged by injury. Mm-hmm. They're really not in good form. Meath played the best quarter of football I've seen all year. But in the middle part of that game, they absolutely fell apart, and they were on the ropes, and it took a Vicky Wall wonder goal to get them over the edge.
As it often does.
Then you look at their next game against Armagh, who for me are quite an average team. I said it before. They rely heavily on two players. They were missing one and Caroline O'Hanlon that day, and Meath absolutely blitzed them. So, you know, while Meath, yeah, absolutely, they're in with the chance of fantastic. I think we might be getting on the bandwagon a little bit early. And then look at Cork. Efi is a master. You know, he's one of the top managers in the game. are Cork playing the long game and we've all been blinded by it? You know, he knew in that group all he had to do was win one game. With all due respect to me, Dan Tipp, he knew he was going to do that. Then he knew he was going to face either Tyrone or Waterford in a quarter final. Again, big respect to those teams, but two teams that he'd be possibly confident of getting past. So we all know Cork are due this massive performance. Does Evie have them peaking at the right time? And I think he might.
Emma?
And that would be typical Cork, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, we've seen them through the years, and like Dublin, they know how to win, and they know how to win when it matters, and they can turn it on the big day. I know from what I've seen of Cork so far, they definitely do need to improve for this weekend. They've been quite sloppy, made some, you know, wrong decisions just with fundamental skills, whether it be shooting, pass and that kind of thing. But like, they're on the big stage now, and they'll thrive on that. Meath, I suppose credit does have to go to Meath for what they have done this year.
Absolutely.
It's been fantastic, like, you know, to come up from winning intermediate last year to be in an All-Ireland semi-final and 60 minutes away from a final at senior level is huge.
For people who are unfamiliar with Meath's journey, like, how did they do that? Because it's not easy to make the progress they have made in such a short period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose their coaching setup, I think, has been massive. Eamon Murray has done a fantastic job.
Yeah, he's the right guys in with him as well.
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's probably a lot of new players there. A lot of younger players have come on and injected something special into Meath. The likes of Emma Duggan, Vicky Wall, unbelievable footballers. Emma Troy, like, they've been some of the best players in the championship this year, I think. And, you know, even I was looking back through a few things when Meath were up senior in 2015. I'm not sure if you remember, but they played Cork and it was on TG Cahir. I don't know, was it a qualifier or what? But
I think it was a qualifier.
It was a qualifier, yeah. Wasn't it? And it was 7-22 to 3 points in the end. That was on TG Cahir. On TV, embarrassed like that, a 40-point defeat at senior. And I was actually speaking to Emma Duggan yesterday, and that was the first Meath ladies game she watched on TV.
Wow.
And here she is now leading the charge. I know, like, a few of the girls are still around, and Monica McGurk, the goalie, I think Vicky Wall was there that
she
day.
She was, yeah.
But there's only a small group of them that have been on that journey since then to now. But what they've done since, you know, like, they've got to two intermediate All-Ireland finals, an intermediate semi-final all in a row. Then they finally got over the line last year. They've come up the leagues from Division 3 to 1. So, like, this is bonus territory for Meath, but they are well fit to put it up to Cork. And, you know, I completely understand why people are backing them, and, like, I wouldn't be shy of doing it myself either.
Yeah, I think huge credit has to go with the Meath County Board. Obviously, after that defeat, they identified the things that were going wrong in Meath football. They put massive funding into the county. Mm-hmm. They upped their numbers. They got the right coaches in the right places. They got more GPOs. And they had a long-term plan. They asked to be relegated back to intermediate. They had their plan for the couple of years. And it's worked. And it's, you know, it's amazing what they've done in one way. But in another way, it's not surprising. And you'd love to see other counties finding out what they've done exactly and replicating that, because credit to them, it's brilliant.
And just in terms of what they do on the pitch, Emma, as well, you know, we talk about Dublin being well drilled and knowing their roles and knowing what they need to do at it nearly every moment of the game. Meath are quite similar, like, they have a game plan, they stick to it, and they can execute it so well.
Yeah, absolutely. They're so well drilled and well structured. And I suppose, I know you were speaking about it last week, how they play with a blanket defence. They kind of have a false or absent half forward line. They drop the whole way back, and then they try and catch teams on the break, which is fantastic to watch, and it's absolutely worked. I think Narramar were naive. They hadn't their homework done properly on that. But I do think, look, this is another step up. This is another level. Cork are going to know exactly what's ahead of them. But look, If this is what Meath have been playing all year and they know it inside out, it should work again. But Cork, that is the flip side, that Cork will be prepared for this.
Okay, call it.
I am going for Cork. I've been over and back all week, but I just think people's vision has been eclipsed by their performances. Like, it's Cork here. Like, littered with
Corkness.
All Ireland. It's Corkness and, you know, littered with all Ireland medals. To be honest, I'd love to see Meath win it, because Cork have been given the opportunity to beat Dublin over and over the last couple of years. It would be great to have a new challenger, but I just think Cork have played the long game, and I think their experience is going to come through.
Okay.
Yeah, I think my head is saying Cork, my heart's saying Meath. I think that's the same for a lot of people. Like, it would be obviously a fantastic story to see Meath get there, but Cork just know how. But yeah, I'm actually just going to say Meath.
At the same time, it would be no surprise if Meath won.
And I've backed Cork.
They're no longer the surprise package.
That's exactly. And I've backed Cork to a hilt so many times on this show, whether it be like football or Camogie. And I feel like they keep letting me down. So look, let's go Meath.
It's the hope that kills you. Right, now, I know we were speaking at the top of the show about Tyrone and the ever-evolving and developing story that is their semi-final against Kerry, which is scheduled for next weekend. Marty Morrissey is with us now live from Mayo. Marty, it has been a developing story. The GPA came out today and they backed Tyrone in the situation that they're in and encouraged them to put their health first. Are you confident that this All-Ireland semi-final is going to go ahead as scheduled?
The honest answer to that right now, Marie, is I don't know, because when I was up in Tyrone yesterday, the numbers were there were 17 players, I think, from what I could gather, affected in some shape or form by COVID-19, either testing positive or indeed as a close contact. And while I left, by the time I left, I think there was another one reporting in as well. So they have, whatever the numbers are, it's 50% or plus more that are now affected by this. And there was deep concern. I mean, I think Brian Duher in his interview with me said it would be a struggle to make the All-Ireland football semi-final against Kerry. And there is, you know, they emphasise to me the huge respect that they have for Kerry as well, and that Kerry are in this dilemma and it's not of their making. But we are in a world pandemic. This is a COVID championship. I think we have to be aware of that. And it's just unfortunate that it comes at this moment in time. This is not exactly what Tyrone would have wanted or wished for. And they are deeply worried that they will have a full squad or even three quarters of a squad, because obviously players who are affected by COVID, as we've heard, you know, it's hard to get back. There's, you know, you don't know how the body is going to respond. Each person is individually different, obviously. So it is complex. It's not black and white. And it's why they are appreciative of the GA giving them 6 days. They were looking for 2 weeks. That was rejected. They were annoyed over it, but they also accepted the GA's decision to give them an extra 6 days. But whether or not Brian Duher, again, if I can quote him from his interview he did with me yesterday, he says it's going to be a struggle and that they would have to make a final call sometime next week. So the next couple of days, it's a fluid situation, Marie, and we just don't know what the final result will be. But it's going to be an interesting weekend in terms of whether or not Tyrone will line out in that All-Ireland semi-final on Saturday week.
It really will. Marty Morrissey, thank you so much for joining us. That is all we have time for. Nadine and Emma, thank you so much for being in here with me. We'll be back tomorrow. It's a big night for Irish clubs in Europe. Tara Stewart's up next.
Game on 2FM.
Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.